It costs you $8 worth of hardware. And the piece of coax cable is going to cost you $40 or $50. If you now try to calculate which way is going to give you more bang for the dollar, you may be better off putting up a second dipole, because people who visit your property don't look up in the air. They don't see wire. And whether you've got one dipole up there or 14 dipoles in your backyard, it almost doesn't matter. Your neighbors are not going to complain. The people who visit you are not going to ridicule you. They'll occasionally see an extra piece of coax going out there if you don't hide it in the tree just right. That's not so bad. So, should you buy a remotely tuned antenna tuner? If you're a real scientist type and you've got a lot of money in your pocket and you can spend it, go for it. But if you're like the rest of us that are kind of paupers and we want to economize and we worry about what is the price-performance ratio we're getting for our purchase, are we getting value for our dollar, you're going to get more value out of putting up another dipole with another piece of transmission line. And if you really want to get the highest possible performance at 3.5 megs at the same time as 4.0 megs, 3.5% or 4% frequency away, and no dipole is that broad, put up two dipoles. Tune one of them to 3.5, tune one of them to 4.0. The dipole is $8 worth of hardware, not counting the feedlot. So there's lots of ways to skin the cat. We shouldn't say that anymore. My cat recently died. So there's a lot of sadness in my house. After 21 years, that cat had a good life, and we had a great amount of affection for it. So there's many ways to solve the problem. It's a better way of wording it. So, yeah, we as amateurs writing emails to Mel and asking these questions, some of these answers we almost know ourselves. Do you have to buy the very fancy gold-plated ground plane antenna, and just because you spent a lot of dollars, you're praying that's going to give you 10 dB more performance than your cheap little dipole? And people are finding out a painful lesson. That's not true. And there's probably some more painful lessons to be learned with reference to remotely tuned antenna tuners. I didn't say it's a bad product. It's a possible solution, but it's a slightly expensive solution. There are other ways. Those are some of my opinions on that one, Mel. K2KEY, KQLIW.
Hey, very good. This is K2KEY. Sorry to hear that the cat peak. 21 years, that's phenomenal for a cat to live. MC is sitting here. And, she's looking up at night. And she's getting up in age, too. And, yeah, very good, Dick. Yeah, well, okay. I have one more here I picked out. I don't know if you want to bother with one more. This may get into a little bit of a discussion here. But it's up to you. Go ahead.
Fire away, Bill.
Hey, I purchased two commercial 26-element JDs. And I want to mount them for cross-polarization. I understand that they require a balanced 300 ohm feed. Is there an arrangement that I can add halfway length of something cable? They said somebody, I guess what he's alluding to, he wants to make a 4-to-1 balance with halfway length of coax. I think I want to cover this. I think I want to cover this. We went into this, like, quarterway section to step up the peak to approximately, I think he came up with about 100 ohms, and the two beams, I think he matched them close by that method to 50 ohms beam line. I'm trying to read between the lines what I remember about this, but basically this is, I think this is what he needs. He wants to put two 26-element JB cross-polarization method of feeding it, Dick, over.
Okay, here's my experience on that one, though. I really fell in love with this 19-element Yagi that I developed way back in 1978. And during the time I wanted to listen to Oscar 10 or Oscar 11 or 12, I think it was Oscar 10, you would get much better 435 megacycle downlink if you were using a cross-polarized antenna, a circular polarized antenna. And my 19-element 432 to 438 Yagi 19 element was obviously set up for horizontal polarization. And what I discovered is if I take two of these Yagi antennas, put them together boom to boom, touching each other, one horizontally polarized, one vertically polarized, and one of them was shoved forward about an inch and a half just to make sure that all the elements didn't touch each other. And I held them together in that mode with hose clamp. And now as long as I feed the signals to each of the horizontal and vertical driven elements correctly with 90 degrees of phase difference, including the difference in distance I created when I shoved one antenna slightly forward of the other, you can mathematically calculate all that. Maybe instead of 90 degrees of difference to make circular polarization, maybe I needed 83 degrees of difference in the phasing of the signal that I fed between the two. And now, to bring that all back to a power divider so I feed the exact same amount of power to the horizontal and vertical and electronically make them 90 degrees out of phase so I make a beautiful circular polarized signal, that's not too difficult. And how you do that power dividing and impedance matching, there's a lot of ways of doing it. Once you accept the fact that a Yagi is a bunch of parasitic elements that are electronically the right length and physically in the right position, you've now got the performance of a Yagi. You can make the driven element out of anything you want, any diameter, any length, any method of feeding it, delta, T, gamma, pi, however you want to feed it. You can feed the driven element any way you want, as long as it gives a good impedance match to your particular feed line, and as long as it radiates in a dipole-like manner, the rest of the Yagi antenna will sync. And now, how do you bring those two individual driven elements together with the right phase shift and the right impedance matching? That's not quite as difficult as it sounds. To a newbie, that's a pretty difficult problem. I'll admit that. And so, if I had a pair of 50-ohm input connectors to those Yagis, to the driven elements of those Yagis, I've done whatever is required of adjusting the length and methods of feeding or whatever so that each individual Yagi is a 50-ohm input impedance with my particular antenna pair. And now how do I feed equal power to two of those? One approach would be to make a real 2-to-1 power divider, 50 ohms in and a pair of 50 ohms out. And you do that with a so-called quarter wave matching transformer. And you do that by taking a piece of square tubing that's a quarter wave or a little bit more longer. You put inside a piece of brass round tubing of just the right diameter so that you make 37.5 ohm impedance. And at one end of that brass tubing, you bring out to the square outer thing a type N connector. At the other end of the quarter wavelength long brass tubing that makes 37 ohm impedance internally, you put a pair of output connectors, type N connectors. So now you've got a 2-to-1 power divider that gives you equal power, equal phase coming out the far end, and it stays impedance matched. And then if I take a pair of 50 ohm cables of equal length, I'd be feeding the two Yagis, the horizontal and vertical, in phase. If I make one of those pieces of cable 90 degrees longer than the other, I haven't adjusted the impedance, but I've adjusted the phase by making it longer, electronically 90 degrees longer. And if I delay the right one, I'm clockwise. If I delay the other one, I'm counterclockwise in what I transmit or receive out of a pair of antennas. So it is a divide and conquer situation. You start off with a known good Yagi, a pair of them, mount them together side by side with hose clamps, 90 degrees apart in polarization. Do whatever is required to make the driven elements your favorite impedance. Do whatever is required to make a 2-to-1 power divider. Adjust the length of the cables appropriately, and you've got a perfectly impedance-matched, circular polarized set of Yagi antennas. That's one approach. There's a zillion more approaches. That's the most direct approach. But there's other combinations in which you put a pair of antennas together that are 50 ohms, you make 25, and now with the right length and the right length of cable, you bring it back up to 50 as a common feed point. But to do that simultaneously and to make the phase length right so that you make circular polarization, now you've made a over-constrained problem. I'd much rather make each individual antenna properly impedance match to the feed line that feeds that particular antenna. and then by coming back to a input-output impedance-matched 2-to-1 power divider, I now have the complete freedom of adjusting one line length versus the other after the power divider in order to get the phase delay correct so I make clockwise and counterclockwise. And I have no further impedance matching problem. That's the way I did it. It ain't the only way, but it's a direct and somewhat understandable way. You got it, Milk. K2LIW.
This is K2KY. Yes, I follow exactly what you are doing. However, and we go again, back in the past, back in the dark ages again. I remember one time, a guy who was an agent on, doing a lot of, he was one of the early birds, and the, trying to remember his call. And he showed me, he was, you know, I had actually questioned him how the heck he was taking these two antennas and cross-polarizing. Basically, what he had come up with, one to the feeder was one feed line. I remember he had there, he had a type NT. And what he did, he said that the beams were actually approximately around 300 ohms deep on each beam. So what he did is use halfway length of coax, let me re-picture this, halfway length of coax to act as a 4-to-1 balance, while he used then quarter wave section to step up the impedance to about 100 ohms, so that the two beams then would match somewhere around the 50 ohm feed line. Am I saying it correct, Dick? Over.
Yeah. One of the nicest, really balanced ways of feeding a driven element, which is what I did on the RIW-19 EID, is to use a half-wave coax balance. What that consists of is electronically a half-wavelength length of semi-rigid cable bent back on itself into a U-shape and shield connected to shield. And your input piece of coax cable is a third piece of semi-rigid cable. All three shields are connected together at the open end at the exact same point. The center conductor of the input cable goes to the center conductor of the halfway balance on one side. Now, because the halfway balance is a halfway length long, the two signals coming out of the halfway balance, semi second. So the halfway balance operates at exactly 180 degrees out of phase between the two ends. And that being fed into a T-connector feeds the driven element very nicely. So it's a completely balanced technique for feeding a T-connector or a pair of gammas, so to speak. And now, the 2-to-1, the halfway coax balance, because it doubles the output voltage, if I put 1 volt in the right-hand side of the halfway coax balance, I get -1 volt out of the left-hand side. So 1 volt in, and I get 2 volts peak to peak. It's a voltage doubler. Therefore, it's an impedance quadrupler. So if my input cable was a 50 ohm piece of cable, my output of the halfway coax balance will be 4 times higher, 200 ohms. If I made it out of 75 ohm cable input connector, 4 times 75 would be 300. So I could feed a 300 ohm folded dipole if I wanted to. However, there's a catch. No, Yagi, with a half wave of a folded dipole would be 300 ohms. Almost all Yagi designs make the driven element lower in impedance than it would be if it was a dipole in free space. So quite possibly the 200 ohm version would be a better match. So that's an approach. Each individual Yagi could be fed with a half-wave coax balance, and depending on how you set those up, you can make the output of the half-wave coax balance, of course, the input end, 50 ohms, if you like, or 75 ohms. And there's various ways out. You can bring a pair of those together at a power divider and adjust the line lengths on one side versus the other so that you're making clockwise or counterclockwise circular polarization. Lots and lots of ways of doing it. But the starting of all of this is to recognize that there's a Yagi design and there's a driven element design. Don't allow one operation to contaminate the other. Start off with a known good Yagi design, build it as is. Do not, in my opinion, do not use the directors of the Yagi as impedance matching devices on your driven element. If you're smart enough, you've got more than enough knobs that you can twist to make the driven element of your Yagi a perfect impedance match. And the WA1MBA website will tell you exactly how to do it, in my opinion. Back to you, Mel, KQLIW.
All right. Well, you see, he says he's got two beams, 26 element J beams, and they have 300 ohm feet. So I was thinking, well, the way I think with that situation, what I was going to give him is really an answer, put across the two beams, you know, 300 ohms, put across the two beams, put the half wavelength of cable across each beam, then take quarter wavelength section and use quarter wave section from each beam to a T.
Yep.
Two quarter wave sections. In other words, I'd require each beam would get a quarter wave section. Now we would have, it would act as a 4-to-1 Balum, while the quarter wave sections would step up the impedance, I would think, to about 100 ohms, so that the two beams then connect together and that system match a 50 ohm feed line. Is there something wrong with that thinking, Dick? Over.
You're going to end up with a reasonable impedance match, but that's only half the problem. How are you simultaneously creating 90 degrees of phase lag of the horizontal versus the vertical in order to generate the circular polarization? Back to you, Mel.
Oh, I figured that if the elements are rotated 90 degrees on a boom, over.
Yes, to make circular polarization, you make the horizontal elements and the vertical elements perpendicular to each other. That's the beginning. That's it. You've now got two Yagi antennas polarization orthogonal. That's the first half. But to complete the whole project of circular polarization, you got one dipole that's going from 3 o'clock to 9 o'clock. That's the horizontal. You got one dipole going from 6 o'clock to 12 o'clock. That's the vertical. And those two dipoles, driven elements, must be fed electronically 90 degrees different from each other. So polarization-wise, they're 90 degrees apart. Electronically, they've got to also be 90 degrees apart. One signal has to arrive a quarter wavelength later than the other signal to make circular polarization. Back to you, Mel.
UCL 136.5. Can't you adjust this thing so that it determines the balance point for this beam before, you know, attaching it to the horizontal spread? I mean, you know, make an adjustment and find the point where it will work this way. Over.
Negatory. Each of your Yagis have to be identical. Each of the Yagis have to be cross-polarized in polarization, one horizontal and vertical, or one slant 45 right and one slant 45 left, in polarization of the Yagi in the way you mount it. That's the first half. The second half is the way you feed the horizontal Yagi and the vertical Yagi driven element must be properly impedance matched. That's item number two. Item number three, the signal from the 3 o'clock antenna must arrive 90 degrees later in time from the signal you put to the 12 o'clock antenna. If the 3 o'clock antenna gets the signal from the transmitter 90 degrees later in time versus the 12 o'clock antenna, then you will be transmitting clockwise circular polarization. You've got three criteria to meet all at once, Mel. My approach to doing that is to make each individual cable going to each individual driven element already impedance matched. Then I have the ability to adjust those cable lengths without further tampering with the impedance. Back to you, Mel.
Hey, can you alter a 26 element JB commercial antenna to fit this criteria without, you know, getting involved in the rest of the properties of the antenna? Dick, over.
I say absolutely, positively, no. If that Yagi was properly tuned, that array of 25 directors is a slow wave structure that has a particular velocity profile, velocity versus position along the boom, that gives you all of this directivity phenomena that you and I call beam width and gain. You don't want to disturb that. And if you disturb that in order to create an additional 90 degrees of delay, you would be forced into clockwise all the time. By electronically switching which feed line going to the two antennas, which one is longer and shorter, by flipping from left to right, so to speak, I can make clockwise and counterclockwise by a simple electronic switching. So do not disturb the Yagi design in order to try to create an electronic phase shift. I strongly recommend you do not do that. That will be a very contaminated experiment. I won't say it's impossible. I'll say that that approach is so difficult. I'm not convinced that CBEC, with his 15 years of modeling, can handle that one for you, Mel.
That's why when he said 300 ohms on each of the antennas, that's the only thing I could come up with. That's what I could see, figuring that if I took the two half wavelengths of coax, put it across, and had to act as half wavelength balance, in other words, it could be a 4-to-1 situation. Then if I figured if you took two quarter wavelength sections and came from each one of the antennas to a T with quarter wavelength sections, you would bring the impedance up to somewhere around 100 ohms, and then I figured if the two beams are fed together, they would very closely match a 50 ohm one feed line. I would assume that's what he wants to do, Dick. Definitely I see that he basically did rotate the antenna 90 degrees on the boom, but with a 300 ohm design, I can't think of another way you could do it simply, Dick, over.
The only way I can think of, Mel, is that if his driven element is truly 300 ohm balanced, then he should use 300 ohm twin lead to each individual Yagi. Now he has the freedom to make one of those 300 ohm twin leads to one Yagi longer than the other. Then where he brings those two 300 ohm twin leads together, yes, that will be 150 ohms. And now there's various ways he can make a half-wave coax balance match 150 ohms. One quarter of 150 is 37.5 ohms. If his main input cable to the common half-wave coax balance was made out of 37.5 ohm coax, or by quarter-wave matching transformer, back a little bit further downrange toward the transmitter, it creates that phenomenon. Now he's simultaneously got a meet and match and the proper phase delay. But to make it come out right, I think he's got to feed each individual Yagi with 300 ohm twin leads. Back to you, Mel.
I was toying with that, why I didn't know how to give an answer. I was thinking right away that the best thing to do was to convert the 300 ohm to a 4-to-1 balance, basically. That's what I was thinking right away. Give me a, you know, convert the 4-to-1 balance. And then with a quarter wavelength section, I thought, the, you know, by connecting them, and they basically, in other words, staying with coax, so that you would have simplicity in making this harness of coming off one beam into the T, coming off the other beam into the T, and then have just one feed cable. I mean, that's the only way I thought, was if I did it this way, I'd see that I'd wind up with approximately 100 ohms, and as I put the two together, I'd be able to most likely match a 50 ohm feed line very, very closely, Dick. I was just thinking maybe of mechanically simplicity of doing it this way, over.
Okay, let me go closer to what you're talking about. If at each individual Yagi I use a half-wave coax balance, which by definition is 4-to-1, 300 ohms becomes 75. Now, with the half-wave coax balance located at each individual driven element of each individual Yagi, each Yagi now is a 75 ohm impedance. Now, if I use 75 ohm coax transmission lines, and there's lots of those available, RG11 is a beautiful example. CATV hardline is another beautiful example. And now, each of the two Yagis have a 75 ohm cable coming away from them. I make one of those 75 ohm cables a quarter wavelength longer than the other. Then I bring them to a common point, and I've got 37.5 ohms. And I impedance match to that. Or, I make a 4-to-1 matching transformer, which is a quarter wave matching transformer out of coax, which is 50 ohms in and a pair of 75 ohms out. That's an easy one. So a quarter wave coax matching transformer, 50 ohms in, if that's your favorite cable, a pair of 75 out. The two 75 coax cables go to the individual Yagis that have the half-wave coax balun at each Yagi. And now, because each piece of 75 ohm cable going to each Yagi is impedance matched at both ends, I have the complete freedom of making any one of them longer or shorter to get the 90 degrees of phase lag that makes circular polarization. That's another approach. Back to you, Mel.
What I was thinking now, okay, so now we've got this, we use the 4-to-1 balance. Now we take quarter wavelength sections from each of the antennas. Would we not step up the impedance to 100 ohms, Dick, over?
What's stepping 100? How did you step from 50 to 100? That's a 2-to-1. You can do that easily with a quarter wave matching transformer. You can't do that with a half-wave coax balun. It's always a 4-to-1. Back to you, Mel.
No. I'm going to put the half-wave lanes of coax to act as a 4-to-1 on each antenna right at the element there. Make a loop and put them on each antenna. Then I'm going to come from each antenna through the T with a quarter-wave length section, figuring that this way I would have an impedance of approximately... wouldn't I step up the impedance then with a quarter wavelength section? I step up the impedance of each antenna to 100 ohms, and then when I connect them each to the T, I would have a summation to a 50 ohm line. Am I right or wrong, over?
You're right in impedance matching, but now how are you creating the phase delay of 90 degrees of one antenna versus the other without disturbing that impedance?
Would this thing work? I don't know. I thought that this is the way I saw it done. That's the way they did cross polarization years ago. You mean to tell me it didn't work? Over.
The way you combine cables, let's see now. 4-to-1 coax, 4-to-1 half-wave coax balun at each Yagi, brought 300 ohms down to 75. If now you use 75 ohm cables from there back to the common point, no problem. Use any other impedance of cables back and do impedance matching in those cables, you no longer have the complete freedom to create the additional 90 degrees of time delay of the signal going to one Yagi versus the other. There's a simultaneous problem going on here. Impedance matching and proper time delay. Unless the coax cables that are doing the time delay are equal on the impedance at both ends, unless they're equal at both ends, I don't think you can get an easy simultaneous solution to those two problems. Impedance matching and time delay. Back to you, Mel.
Okay, the two quarter wavelength pieces that were coming from each antenna. How about the way we hook it to the element? In other words, if we, hook one to, let's say, one side of the element and the other one to the other side of the element on the other beam, what will be the effect? Would we get any kind of cross-polarization by that method, Dick, over?
By the way you connect to the driven element, you can make 0 or 180 degrees of phase delay. Nothing in between. 90 degrees of phase delay must be done with an extra length of cable feeding one antenna versus the other antenna. Back to you, Mel.
Okay, so now, if we did it by my method and wound up, what would we have to add? Could he add something to create that delay over?
Because you're using the feed lines going to each individual antenna simultaneously as a quarter wave matching transformer, that negates your ability to make an additional 90 degrees of delay without disturbing that impedance match. That's the way I see it, Mel.
Okay, so now, what would happen if, for instance, if we set it up the way I just, you know, more or less laid it out, he would get that 50 ohm match and all. What will happen to as far as the performance of the antenna gets over?
Okay, when I've got a pair of cross-polarized Yagis, and if I don't feed one 90 degrees lighter in time than the other, if I feed them both equal in time, I've made a very elaborate antenna that has 45 degree slant linear polarization. It's the equivalent of having the horizontal plates and the vertical plates of a scope. If I feed them an in-phase signal and make a 45 degree slash line across that screen, if I feed the horizontal plates 90 degrees later than the vertical plate, then I make a circle on that screen. Back to you, Mel.
Okay, I was just trying to come up with a simple, elegant, you know, answer to his problem here that was a simple, you know, makes it simple. I see I'm making it more difficult. All right, very good. I guess basically, in other words, you can't get cross-polarization just by making up a simple matching harness. A little bit more to it than that. All right, I guess we'll let it go. There was another question about gamma matching on 144, but I think that's enough for tonight. Getting late, and I know you most likely are tired. K2RIW and the TechNet, K2KY.
Yeah, my family's hollering at me. I've got some tools out in the yard, and the rain is coming toward me. I'm looking at the radar map right now. So I better go handle that one. Yeah, just making Yagis cross-polarized is only halfway there to making circular polarization. Simultaneously, you have to have 90 degrees of time delay of the signal getting to one Yagi versus the other. Very similar to what happens when you're making residue patterns on an oscilloscope. The horizontal plates and the vertical plates, one signal's got to be delayed 90 degrees compared to the other signal. If you feed the horizontal plates and the vertical plates of an oscilloscope in phase, you make a simple 45 degree slash line across the screen. That ain't circular polarization. That ain't a circle. Okay, I gotta leave you guys. 73 you all. This was TechNet number 1138 of the series that began in September of 1982, way back in the dark ages. We're coming up on 25 years this coming September of essentially continuous TechNet almost every Sunday for 25 years. Alrighty, bye-bye you all. Try to be kind to each other. And Mel and I will try to get to more of this jazz next week. 73, back to you, Mel, for any other final. K2RIW, clear listening.
Dick, very good. Yeah, okay, I'll leave the up one. Got some theories here about positioning of antennas and all 432 for 144. Oh, my God. I have to pick through all these and try to come up with, you know, what exactly they're looking to do. Oh, my God. Some of these emails I got. All right, we'll tackle them next week. As Dick says, we'll try to do it again. 73, everybody. Have a great week. Enjoy the holiday tomorrow, but let's not forget what it's all about. So, good thoughts, you know, for our people that are over there now risking their lives for our freedom is very important. 73, take care. This is K2KEYN, K2RIW with the TechNet thing, 73 to all.